report. Honourable.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, just a quick, I'm a bit confused about something. The Auditor's General Report and the Annual Report, with regards to the irregular expenditure, they say that all outstanding issues regarding irregular expenditure have been sorted out. That's what the Annual Report says, but the Auditor General Report says that there are still matters outstanding, so they're contradicting each other. So with regards to the irregular expenditure, you know, have all reasons for this irregular expenditure been, you know, been sorted out? And then, Chair, I just want to mention, I don't think the members of the SABC board know, but in a questions and answer session that I had with the Minister in Parliament on the 10th of November, it was actually the day that the SABC board was supposed to come to us, I was very, very impressed with an answer that the Minister gave me. We were talking about general turnaround strategies of the SABC and what the way forward was regarding finance. And he answered questions of mine specifically regarding irregular expenditure. And one of the questions that I asked him in Parliament, because it was an oral questions and answer session, I asked him if, in fact, legal action would be taken against people who were found to be behaving negligently in causing irregular expenditure. And he guaranteed me that in talks that he was, sort of ongoing talks that he was having with the SABC board and, you know, in general, following the Auditor's General Report, in fact, legal action would be taken against people. And I really think that that's a positive step in the right direction, because then people know that there's consequences. And you know, you can't just claim to not have known, because, you know, this is South African public funds that we're dealing with. So I just thought that that was great. So if I could just have a little bit of clarity regarding the contradiction between the two reports, please.
Honourable Sir. Okay. Can we get their response?
Thanks, Chairman. Just in relation to the last point, and then I'll hand over to the CEO, that's in, particularly in relation to potential criminal action on the basis of reckless expenditure, etc. That is part of the brief, and my colleague, Mr. Keener, can speak to that as well. But part of the brief to the SIU, particularly in those cases where it involves going into bank accounts, because while the SABC can do a lot of that work internally itself in terms of breach of procurement regulations, in the very serious cases of looking at where money may have changed hands, etc., we don't have that investigative capacity from a legal perspective. That's been handed over to the SIU, and the express instruction is that where there has been a criminal breach, that charges will be laid and they will be pursued. Just also going back to an earlier point, Chairperson, in terms of the contractual issues around procurement, a lot of the contracts, some of them quite long-standing in the SABC, are being reviewed as a block to investigate whether they were irregularly granted or went to tender, which I think addresses the issue raised by the Honourable Member in front of me.
Mr. Kim?
As Chairperson, we do acknowledge that the AG did say that there were outstanding matters, and that because of the time that they had spent in SABC, they could not do everything. When we came to present to SCOPA, our colleagues from the FIU were in attendance, and they've taken it upon themselves to help us engaging the AGSA. We must say that they are now cooperating. Initially, AG did not want to cooperate with SIU until such time that SIU wanted to subpoena them, and they started cooperating. So they are working now hand in hand, and we don't understand why they didn't want to cooperate with an agency appointed by us to help us. But fortunately, sense prevailed, and they're now cooperating very well with them. And they are saying in the work that they've done since we went to SCOPA and now, they are getting more information in dealing with that. They currently have 8 dockets that are with the Commercial Crimes Unit, and which can go to court anytime now. And they are saying that there is a lot of information that they are finding now that they have the proclamation with them. For example, they were making an example with one case where they're saying that they'll follow one account, and out of that account they'll discover that 3-4 more accounts where monies were transferred to. So, which really explains that we might be dealing with a matter that was deep-rooted and systematic. So, we will at an appropriate time then say who are those 8 people that we have dockets. And there are other people that were mentioned in the public domain, unfortunately, and now the SIU people were saying when I met with them that they have not been able to find anything. So we will really want to be careful in terms of going into the names of people in terms of those dockets and other people that were mentioned in the public domain, including those that were mentioned by the AGSA report, because they are saying currently as it stands, to some of the people when they do make follow-ups, they have not yet picked up anything, but they are continuing with the investigation. Thank you.
So the linkage between the annual report and the AGS report is that we've got overlapping cases, which the annual report reflects into that, but they've been picked up by the AGS in terms of the now handed over to the SIU. But I think the issue of the linkages between the two, the annual report and the AGS.
Yes, in fact, they took it upon themselves because they were here when we were presenting to SCOPA. And when we were answering questions, they took it upon themselves. After that, they said, we can help, SABC, we can help you. Because since this is within our mandate that you gave us, we can help you to go to the bottom of these matters. So the 8 dockets is not the maximum of dockets they're going to have. They're saying as they continue to investigate, they will create more dockets and then hand them over to the Commercial's Camp unit to then do their work in terms of completing the necessary processes.
Any other question, Honorable Tebe and Father Begrupol?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. On page 1 of your the Auditor General recommendations, there's a bullet there. I just want clarity on it for me to understand it better. In relation to what you've just said, whether is this the same information or is the same actions you're referring to, is bullet number 2 from down. It says, internal audit has sought the permission of the audit committee chair to follow up on actions in progress by the SIU. Which are those follow-ups? Have you already get that the audit chair has made that follow-up? What is happening here? And then the other one is on page 2, one of your corrective measures is to have an awareness campaign. I just want to know what will be your focus, your target, and the time frames, and what do you want to achieve in regard to this awareness. And on the paragraph below, you are saying, I think in regard to effective of policy framework, just underneath that you are saying the review of policy cannot be the function or the responsibility of the community secretary. Then whose responsibility is? I think something is missing there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just want to go back to the whole question about the consultants. We know that the acting CEO said earlier this morning there's a significant decrease in the number of consultants being used by the SABC, and if we look at the list, there's a lot of money being spent on paying consultants, and in the audit general, one of the actions required stated, determine the reasons why consultants were appointed without following SCM policies and PFMA. Just want to know what correcting steps the SABC took to prevent the use of consultants without following all the specific procedures, etc. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mthambi.
Thank you, Chair. It's on page 2. On the heading private travel company.
on the fruitless and irregular expenditure. The issue around the SABC executive board, the former one and the two executives, the issue of the tax. Are we only waiting for SARS on actions requiring attention? The last page. Is everybody there? It's page 2 on the under the heading private travel company. On the status, private travel company. That's the heading. Page 2. Under travel, private travel company. It's a fruitless, the topic is fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure. The action requires investigate the tax implications of the trips and review of all other international trips for compliance with the income tax, including all international trips. That's the heading. Did you get it? Yes. Yeah, page 2. The last paragraph. On the action requiring attention. Yeah, it was with regard to the issue, the non-disclosure income, the income tax that was not deducted for the benefits received. So my question is based on that, to say apart from waiting the investigation from SARS, because my issue is that there was an issue of non-compliance by the board members and senior executives. Are we just leaving it waiting for SARS investigation, whereas we know there's a transgression that has taken place? Is the issue of discipline again, Chairperson?
Managed to find it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just in relation to this issue, this was referred by the board to SARS for proper investigation because there wasn't disclosure, so the board took action the moment it came to our attention. This was an inherited issue. It was this big sort of Beijing trip that the previous board took. In relation to the two individuals, particularly Gab Mampone and Mr. Mbebe, action was taken against them.
Another question before this one for Mr. Van der Berg and Tabe.
Chair, around the issue around the company secretary, the policy review function, other than the delegation of authority framework itself, is the accountability for the responsible executive. So the finance one would fall under the CFO, which is why it says it cannot, the review of the policy cannot be the function that the responsible of the company secretary. It has to be done by each divisional head in the course of the year. So that has to be included in the KPIs as part of the turnaround. You'll note that one of the steps in the turnaround was review of expenses policies. So that covers quite a lot of this. Then you also asked the question about reasons, Mr. Van der Berg, about the consultants. One, there are the procurement processes that have been tightened up about the selection of consultants. Two, there must be a business case signed off by finance before you can bring a consultant on board. And third, there has to be a performance contract in the contract with the consultant with defined deliverables that they have to deliver during the duration of their contract. So those are the three controls that were put in place as a consequence of this finding. And so that the business case itself actually deals with the reasons for the consultant. So the person must make a business case and they must have a budget for it. I'm trying to find the other, there was one other. That's one that Peter dealt with. I think that's everything, Chair.
I also asked a question on page 1 in regard to the internal audit. has got the permission of the Audit Committee Chair to follow up on actions in progress by the ICU.
You quite right. There were two that we've forgotten. This one, effective as an internal audit. This is in respect of whether or not those issues that the SIU found as weaknesses in the control systems, that internal audits perform a follow-up audit on those matters. And that will be part of the audit program for the next 3 years that's currently being developed, so that then the internal auditors will follow up on all those control breakdowns to make sure that they're put into place. And then your fraud awareness week, I think was your other question. And you said, what will they be made aware of? It's both what fraud is, what the controls are, and the mechanism, thank you, Chair, for reporting fraud in the organization. So the hotline, the whistleblowers, all of those things. So it deals with both what is a fraud and how to report it.
On the same question asked about your target and what do you intend to benefit out of that?
I think the issue is that you have that or you want to embark on that campaign. What is your target? What are your timelines in terms of where you can be satisfied that your campaign indeed was successful and so on?
That, as I said, is going to be part, or not on this question, sorry. That will be part of the internal audit program for next year, which the board is still to sign off on, in terms of which they'll set all of those parameters about what are the performance targets and how will they be measured. Normally, we do a follow-up around whether any awareness campaign has worked, but I'm not specifically aware of any particular test to see whether people are aware of fraud. It would be difficult to measure whether people are aware of a campaign to combat fraud. But at the point taken that there must be a defined objective and goal to measure it. So thank you.
Honorable Panabra. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Sometimes it's necessary if you receive maybe a negative report from the Auditor General just to get some distance from this report. And as I said, sometimes reports of the Auditor General is negative, but I think the intention at the end is to learn something out of that report and to make decisions to prevent things going wrong in future. In a nutshell, I just want to ask the Acting CEO, after going through this Auditor General report and the board and the CEO sit together and, as I said, getting some distance, just a general answer, or Chairperson, maybe the most important things that the SABC board, being in a bit miserable situation over the past couple of months, what have they learned out of this Auditor General report and some positives out of the negative they can take forward into the next year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Can respond?
Well, Chairperson, one of the most important lessons was that if your internal audit system is not working, is not in place, that the head of internal audit is weak, you get exactly what happens. So our audit committee is very much focused on creating an effective internal audit structure. This awareness campaign is aiming at getting the staff, the employees, to be the monitors, in fact, of the very process of internal controls, so that we can know ahead of time and not wait until there is the audit time that there is something going wrong. So we are very much pleased with that. So we are now doing a search for the new head of audit. That process has started, and we are hoping that we really set in close coordination between the audit committee and the internal audit people.
Chair, can I just add to that? Certainly what's been said by the Chair. You know, one of the issues is goes to the issue of structure, because previously the head of internal audit was reporting to the GCEO, and that person was in an acting position, and as the Chair has pointed out, that position will be filled by a full-time person, and that process is actually very advanced. But the second issue, and this is going to go to the Audit Committee at its next meeting, is that it's become sort of good practice in a number of state-owned entities, because it's quite hard for people who are employees to, in a sense, report and hold to account other employees, that certain functions of internal audit get outsourced. So certain quite large SOEs that are in the process of turnaround, parts of that internal audit function have been outsourced to, say, an accounting firm, not necessarily on a full-time basis or on a 10-year basis, but just in a preliminary short-term period to, in a sense, pull the organization right in to make sure there's proper accountability. And then the reporting line also has to change. And those are issues which are going to the next audit committee meeting.
Chair, I just want to add one more comment to answer Honourable Funnenberg's question there about what we learned. When we were working through the turnaround strategy, we've actually embedded what we learned out of the AG's report into the turnaround strategy, in that the basis of the turnaround strategy is bringing broadcasting back into the culture of the SABC. And off that, we've got six big pillars. Two of those big pillars are leadership and governance and management, financial management and controls. So two of the six pillars actually refer directly back to what we learned out of the Auditor General's report. So it's very, very much part of the turnaround strategy as well. We haven't just left the report, in a box somewhere. We're weaving it into our turnaround strategy.
I can see your appetite is back now. Honourable Member Van der Berg and Honourable Kennedy.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think this is very productive what the Chairperson and Mr. Harris and Ms. O'Neill just said. Can we have some more inputs from the other members of the board? And I especially want to hear firsthand also from the acting CEO on this whole matter, because I think this is very important for the SABC going forward and be a strong public broadcaster in South Africa, because the role of the public broadcaster is very, very, very important, and I think that's why Parliament is so concerned about the situation at the SABC, and I'm sure with dedication and things can be rectified in future. If we can have some more input on this, Honourable Chairperson, I will be glad. Then we sort of get the sense of the urgency and whatever of this whole situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Killen.
Thank you, Chair. I think what is important in this process is that it is, as Ms. O'Neill has said, and I think to a certain extent the chairperson of the board as well, is that we must weave a particular approach to public finance management into the management processes of the organization. What often happens is something sort of comes along over years, sort of a type of almost a slackness, and then after a while there's a crisis, and then it comes right up in the uppermost of your mind. But thereafter, it's human nature. Once all the serious problems have been resolved, you tend to relax a bit. And I think what is important in this exercise is that this should actually be, because it's a new board, it is a board that has really inherited an SABC in crisis, etc. I think it is imperative that we know that you had an unqualified audit. It is good, but we also know that there are some weaknesses, and very serious weaknesses. And I think if we keep the line of accountability, and if we keep people responsible for specific things, if we look at the report that was tabled, actually part of it is actually very interesting because it deals with specific persons who are responsible. And I think that essentially in the end is going to be sort of the success of your recovery strategy. It's how to keep people accountable for whatever they are responsible for, so that in the process you build a whole hierarchy of responsible people so that you strengthen the management on all levels, strengthen the controls, etc. Thank you, Chair.
I can see you are battling to say the word that the board is on course. You must just say it. Don't play around the wording. They are on course. Miss Zanfoss? Or not yet, but they are on course.
Your chairperson, the Honourable Van den Berg wanted a comment from other board members. And I'm just really following on from Ms. O'Neill and Ms. Harris and other colleagues, that really, essentially, you all know that what really started to precipitate what and unearthing what was going on at the SABC was when the unions brought the report to the Parliament. And that kicked because there you had invoices, you had documentation, because it took staff members to say enough was enough. So also really following on, it's obviously going to very much depend on the commitment and caliber of the persons who are working at the SABC and who are committed to excellence within the SABC, and ultimately, of course, leadership. Because it's a matter of record that there were certain persons who treated the SABC as a cash cow. You one only had to look at the number of employees that were engaged in numerous other, private and other business ventures. So it's leadership, but it's obviously the caliber and commitment of the persons who are employed that we need to look at very, very carefully.
Mr. Gina, you see the problem. Don't follow Honorable Van der Berg's advice. That's what other board members are saying. Then you are tempted to talk. No, it's misleading you. The rest has already responded.
Thank you, Sir President. I just wanted to say, in between the time we presented to SCOPA and today, I wanted to give more information on the work that the SIU has done. They have actually discovered that there are four more employees who fall in the category of the conflict of interest matters, who fall within the AXA period of review. It means they were somehow missed by the AGSA, and two of the employees received in excess of 80 million rand. So it's a new report. It has not come to the board, but in the briefing that they've given me is that that's what they are finding. So it shows that work is continuing. And what they will do, because they also have an advocate in their team, Advocate Khan is working with them in their team, what they bring to SABC, they actually bring a draft charge sheet. So when they pick up this thing, they don't just say we've picked up this thing. Where they feel that in terms of PFMA and in terms of the laws of the country, there needs to be disciplinary. They bring a draft charge sheet to us so that we may action, and we can assure the board, the portfolio committee and the country that as and when we receive those draft charge sheets, we'll make sure that action is taken against people, and irrespective of their position, action will have to be taken. The petrol cart investigation is still continuing. They are going deeper into it. What the strategy they have adopted is that they want to check, because there are some people who have got motor plans. And on top of the motor plan, they were claiming things that are supposed to be covered by the motor plans. So the SIU is saying, Cedric, we want to have the board to compare this thing, to say if Mr. So-and-so claimed for an engine, we want to check if that car was a BMW on a 5-year motor plan, and the engine was covered by the motor plane, why then would that person claim for it? Because they're saying that if they go deeper, they may pick up that there was collusion between your some companies, some service providers, maybe your tire company selling tires and those things. So they are going deeper into that, not just the engine did very well to pick it up, but they are now going deeper into even checking if a car, if a person claimed that on a particular day he put in petrol to come to go to somewhere, and on that particular day it is revealed that he was actually sitting in the office. So they're going into the details. So that's why the cooperation between them and the AGSA, which they've finally achieved, is important, because we might come back, when we come back again here, to give you more information that we've actually found more information. And we are impressed with their work, and it will come to the board in the next board meeting.
Thank you very much. Honorable Muroto? No, I thought they might give them, maybe they might also cover what the Honorable want to ask.
Oh, no. Which one? My space here, I just am getting to the end. Which one? Okay. Jefferson. No, I just don't want to waste your time. You know, I was appalled by the fact that as we get excited that the SABC is really improving, all of a sudden, Mr. Fundamental wants to be a chairperson of the SABC. And I wanted to correct that. He cannot really delegate the members of SABC of whom to answer to what. But I think I've been covered. Thank you.
Now, on the point of order, Chairperson, I just asked a general question. That is my right to ask this general question to the members of the board, to this Parliament's oversight, and I'm entitled to do that. Thank you. I've asked in the beginning. Thank you, Chairperson.
That's why I allow you to. The only problem is step your authority when you start to want to pinpoint who must respond on your question. But Dr. Ngubane, it seems that some other people are taking over your responsibility. So we must be careful in terms of your responsibility and so on. But members, those are the issues around the issue. But there is one issue which Mr. Gina has dealt with in passing. We have not dealt with that matter. Part of the AG's report, we're talking about the conflict of interest employees within the SABC. We have not dealt with that matter. But in passing, we have mentioned it. Maybe if you can just take this opportunity to deal with that particular matter.
On the conflict of interest, there were more than 1,600 employees in SABC who were found to have business interests. And many of them have left the organization. And as I said, the FIU is doing work on those that are still remaining in the organization. But internally, the acting GCO has actually written a memorandum to staff to deal with those matters. People have been invited to actually declare if those that are in active companies. Because according to SIU, the majority of people who appear on CIPRO are actually directors of dormant companies. It's very few of them. I think it's very few of them. That have companies that are active, and it's very, very few of them who have companies that have acted with SABC. And the SIU has been able to pick up, because you know you register a company under a particular name, and but you have another name for it to operate. So they are saying that there's been those instances where people do not actually say that my company is registered as a Blue Trade Sky Trading 176, but it's operating as in Zalabantu Corporation. So they are able now to, when they go deeper, they can see that this company is actual fact, this company, because in terms of CIPRO, the company might appear to have another name, but have another operating name. So those are the things that they are going into detail and they are picking up. As I said, they've already picked up that there were other four employees that were not picked up by the AG report. and they are helping us to prepare the proper documentation that, as they hand it over to us, we may be able to take appropriate action. For those that are still in SABC, for those that are no longer in SABC, and yet they are found to have participated in the scheme, they will their advice that they say they will give to us is to go the civil action route, so that we may recover. And there are matters depending on the amount of money that is involved. They are even saying that some of the matters they will pass them to AFU, to the asset forfeiture unit, so that assets may be recovered.
So, if I hear you well, you are saying around that issue, you are not definite in terms of the final report. It's an ongoing report, in particular, to be able to identify those who got those conflicts of interest and other things. So it's not a definite report, it's an ongoing report.
Yes, so as I said, when we come back here, we'll be able to give you a report with definite action with names of people. But internally, we are satisfied as a board that the acting CEO and the team have issued a memorandum which states clearly what should happen. And we don't expect that going forward people will also claim ignorance when these things happen. But very soon, as I said, there are already people that are identified that have clearly participated in a process of throwing the javelin, whereby a person is involved in the process, but at the same time the company that is used is a company that he or she is related to. They have even said that they would want us to improve our SCM policy because, for example, they're saying that the AGSA did not have enough time to review the SCM policy in SABC. So they were saying as they are doing work in SABC, they are also currently doing work in ESCOM. And they say what they've learned in ESCOM, when they compare the SCM policy in ESCOM and the SCM policy in SABC, the SCM policy in ESCOM is so watertight that if they had their way, they were going to say, SABC, just take this policy and look at it. So obviously, I don't have the powers as an individual, but this is what I'll take to the board and say, this is the view of the people from SIU that our policies need to be strengthened, and they think that ESCOM has got a very good SCM policy, which we may use as a basis to develop a watertight policy. I mean, they say the ESCOM policy goes to the details of even saying what kind of presence you can get. They go to the details of even soccer games tickets. Who can give you soccer game tickets and what do you need to do? So it's a comprehensive policy from what they say. And I will go to the board when the next board meeting meets and discuss that matter. Luckily, we've got a good relationship with people in ESCOM, and they have said that if the board requests formally, they will be able to share that policy with the SABC. Thank you.
The matter which I'm also, I hear that you've got your plus or minus 1.6 employees who might be... But you are still continuing your report. But the issue which I'm interested at is that initially, when we're dealing with the other issue of disciplinary cases, and recently we're dealing with the issue of the awareness which we are going to undergo, I just want to check whether the ongoing process by the acting CEO, what happens if the employee does not comply? Because you see, we need to be clear so that next time when we ask you, we are able to respond. Because you are busy with that process, trying to encourage people are supposed to declare their interests and so on. What happens if they don't comply with that? Are you going to have another awareness campaign to go around and say, hey, declare, they're doing now? I'm just asking so that we are clear how do we move forward around this particular matter. But I take the issue that you have seen is an ongoing work we are doing.
There are three steps to this. The first one is we now know from this investigation what individuals have investments in which companies. We're reconciling that back to their own personal declarations, and where there's been inadequate declarations, we're going back to the employee and saying, why have you falsely declared. Now, we have to find out what the answers are, but if the declaration is because they haven't declared a company that's actually doing business with SABC, well, there's some consequences for that, because that's a fraudulent non-disclosure. If I ever see Townhouse Complex, maybe your attitude may be different. We've also asked people to make a declaration of all the outside work interests at SABC, so if they're working these companies outside of business hours, we need to know on the disclosure. If they need time during business hours, they need permission. So we withdrawn, with the effect of the 30th of November, all permissions to perform outside work at the SABC. Unless there's been a direct response, a direct request from to my office, and that was they had to respond by last week, Wednesday. Most of the responses we've received are people who do voiceovers, translation for Love Life campaigns, the usual thing about translation services in the SABC and voiceovers, which are not particularly serious issues. We now need to go back to people and say, well, you've now made these declarations. This is what we know. You haven't applied for outside work. If you proceed to perform outside work on SABC hours, it will be a disciplinary event. And that's fairly easy to request, because if people are listed as directors, there's a director's attendance register which they will be required to provide to us. And if they didn't take work, if they didn't take leave for the days that they attended the director's meeting or subcommittee meeting, then there will be disciplinary consequences. In the same way, someone is absent without leave. So that is the way we're trying to close the loop around this chair.
You see, acting CEO, I accept that probably you need to engage people. But I'm saying we've embarked on a process. We have requested everyone to disclose their interests. Now we are saying if you find that the other people have not yet still have disclosed, we have still to engage them. Why do we have to engage them? Whereas they've committed the people to take action, they are not taking action. Why do we have to engage them further around that issue instead of taking decisive action and dealing those people who are not complying?
Yeah, I think you misunderstand what I'm saying. When you engage with somebody, it is that they must explain why they haven't complied with the policies and procedures. And based on that, you can make your next step about your next, you can decide what the next step is.
Okay. My apologies. I thought you are still going to engage on what they are going to do. So to me, it's a clear-cut matter. You don't comply with the request, then there are consequences. Honorable sir?
Mr. Chairperson, I also have a concern on the engage issue. Maybe it's clarified that we cannot engage forever. No, my concern is just a smaller one that, you know, there's a good intention. Some of work has been done. My concern is that we cannot keep on working without time frames. Most of the things you are saying, I don't know what to say, comrade, SABC, Mr. Nicholson, most of the issues, we have responded to issues in Mr. Gina. But my worry is the time frames. For example, there are issues that you keep on saying is ongoing. It's ongoing till when? There are issues that the internal audit still have to investigate and recommend to ESCO. What are the time frames? So that next time when you come back, we know that this is where we went through, this is where we are, then we have to go forward. But if always is this internal investigation by the audit committee, till when?
Listen, we have a board meeting on the 13th of December, which will receive a lot of the things that we're talking about, especially those things that are still at the level of different subcommittees, Chairperson. So we will take decisions on the 13th of December in the board meeting.
No, thank you very much. But I think what you must do, you'll be appearing before the committee early next year in terms of your operational, your strategic plan. I would think that when you come and appear before the committee, you must have clear timeline on all the issues, when are you going to deal with those issues. But it's fine for your meeting which is coming. But to come back to that question, that we need your strategic plan with a clear time frame and all these issues which you are talking about, when are you going to do what and so on, so that you can be able to measure your progress around those particular matters and so on. Honorable Tammy?
Thank you, Chair. It's again on interest, declaration of interest, to understand in simple language, the follow-up. Are SABC employees allowed to do work with the SABC in terms of your internal policy?
It's a simple question. That SABC employees are allowed to do work within the SABC.
Chair, the policy requires disclosure of the conflict so that it can be managed. It doesn't prohibit working for the SABC. In particular, the biggest area, I suppose, where that is occurring is around freelance contracts. Yes, so someone is a permanent news cameraman, but they're also freelance on a Saturday or Sunday. So there's no absolute ban on people doing work with the SABC if they're employed by the SABC.
Tammy?
There's no ban from management level up to the general worker. That's the implication that I'm hearing. I will give a typical example. You are the CFO. And then, as long as you have declared an interest, you can still consult and do maybe audit services for SABC. It's by implication what you are getting. Because my understanding of declaration of interest is to avoid conflicts of interest. How is that managed? Maybe I want to understand that. How is it then managed? If then I declare and still I'm allowed to do business with the SABC, how is this conflict of interest then managed?
I think the question goes at the heart of your policy. How does it look like? Who's allowed to do what? Because I understand your response, Mr. Nicholson, you have to declare. But does that mean you can also operate in the space which you are also operating as an employee? I think it's a differentiation exactly. How does it work in order to make sure that you avoid? But I must say, 1.6 employee in one organization having some sort of things is a little bit too much. But maybe if you can explain the policy position. How does it work? How do we draw the line? The CFO, being a director of an audit firm or whatever company dealing with finances, coming back to SABC to do the business because we have declared the interest and so on, then it's fine. How does it work exactly?
Yeah, there are two things. The one is you may not make the decision on the awarding of the work or be involved. You have to take that to your boss in terms of a delegation of authority framework. There's provisions for upward referral. So you can't sit on the tender committee that decides that you should be the person getting the tender. The other issue is obviously an obligation on the manager to manage that situation. So there's an obligation of you to bring it to your boss's attention and an obligation on your boss to manage that situation. That's how the current framework works.
Mr. Gay? Chair, 1,600 employees of an organization that has 5,000, almost 5,000 employees, represent what the party that you represent in your other capacity as a Mpumalanga chairperson calls the tenderpreneurs. So maybe this proves that your analysis in your other cap as a South African Communist Party that South Africa is full of tenderpreneurs. Thank you.
We are not helping. You see, we are not helping. You see, the issue here with what, because you see, we raise this question going forward. Because we need to be clear, how does this declaring mean in an employee, at what area are you operating? What does the policy mean or exactly saying? Because you see, you can't have an honorable master having a company or she's a DJ. And now
She's working at the ICAF, but she's got a company who's got something to do with the ICAF's work and so on. Where do you draw the line between the day-to-day operation of the employee and the issue of the conflict of interest? Because you see, why many members are raising this issue that we start to suspect that the instability in the SAPC mostly is caused by this interest, other than anything else. You might suspect and start to conclude, to move towards the conclusion that part of the problem, if 5,000, 1 plus or minus 1.6, they were business interest, part of the problem at that level, it might be that everyone is looking after his or her interest, other than focusing to the core work which you are appointed to do in the SAPC. It's a core issue which really we need a clarity around it, and how do you want to manage it moving forward? Because really we might continue having some little bit of problems there, because people, you know, as we are sitting discussing, but I can't touch certain things even if you're supposed to, because it might interfere with my other interests in another section and other things and so on. How do we deal with that? Because to me, we are a little bit in a dilemma as an organization. How do you manage this thing? But I think that's why the question is coming so strong, because the reality, a clarity is needed so that everyone is on board. We don't want you to do something illegal or anti your police and so on, but how do you want to move forward about this particular matter so that we keep some of the things?
Sorry, Chair, thank you. You got...
Nicholson? Then I'll take it.
Chair, I think you got two choices. You either allow through a process of upward referral and authorization, or, except for freelance work, you ban it. If you say that if you are active in selling PCs, you may not tender. We get ourselves tied up in knots, but actually the answer is either you will allow it and have a process of review and then run the risk, as you put it, of other interests guiding how, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours later. Or you ban it outright. And I think that's a policy decision that the board must take under consideration and advise which way it wants to go at a governance level.
Ms.
Kivian? Chief, actually, Ms. Dickelson has really summed it up. Because I would like to concur with the chairperson that I believe that part of the problem with the disciplinary processes and all of those issues relate to this very core problem that the SABC is facing. And I think the time has come for the SABC board to take this matter very seriously and to take a decisive decision. Let's clean up the organization. Let's provide for rewards commensurate to your efforts, and let's attract people on the basis of their skills. Let's build the organization on a sound footing. But let's stop processes which essentially is undermining other processes of the organization. And I believe that time has come for the SABC to say, if you work for the SABC, you are not to conduct any business operation. You cannot participate in processes, upward referrals and downward referrals and all of those issues. That is where part of the problem has no doubt emanated from. And I think we should take a bold step. People at the SABC, in management level positions, etc., they should be adequately rewarded, and it should be on par with bodies of a similar nature, so that you do attract the right type of people, but do not allow them to conduct any business with the organization. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable McGovern.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. I think Honourable Chilean, she has covered me partly. But Chair, I was going to suggest to the board of the SABC, maybe because this resides right at the center of the policy, maybe the board to go and benchmark with other, your partners, other broadcasters, and find out how did they deal with this issue. Then you can take it from there. But I would love to see, Chair, where the SAB SABC employees to be banned, not to trade or to tender to the same SABC. I think it should be very clear. But let the board first do the benchmarking. By the time you are now drafting your policy or your regulation, your internal whatever you're going to call it, at least you have a supporting, you know, a document or information being compared with other broadcasters. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mutam.
You see, Chairperson, if I'm double employed, one part of my job will suffer. Definitely, then I'll focus on my private work, because on this employed one, I'm sure that there is income that's guaranteed. That's why you are having what we are having currently now with the SABC. Because it's also majority of the staff members, like the Honorable Portmenda has indicated, that they are tender premiers. So they tend to neglect the job that they've been employed to do and focus on their contracting work, because it means double income. I think with this one, Comrade Nziki, without, we've seen a report, Comrade Seva will agree with me, on the Auditor General where it says officials dealing with government, and it was also affecting government services. So the same thing, I think on this one, as the board, like she has indicated, you need to seriously go and review that policy. You cannot work for yourself. It can never happen. It's an ethical issue too. How do you recuse yourself on an issue that you definitely know that I've got an interest, a vested interest that will supplement my income? So I think this one, it just needs the board to quickly act on that, because there are those committed employees in the SABC who don't have tenders and they are working tirelessly. But there are those other ones who have got their companies, their focus is on their companies, neglecting their duty what they've been employed for. They still get a fed check. Never mind you see this low morale sometimes of staff, because there are those hardworking, they don't get extra income. There are those that are neglecting their responsibility. They still get paid and still get paid for their contract. Also, from the party where I come from, we said we are going to create employment. I think South Africa has got a lot of expertise outside there. Those contracts that are there, if people are not employees of the SABC, you can still find people who can do the job outside. And we create employment as is part of our government policy.
Honorable Fanerva. Sorry.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think I absolutely agree what my Honourable colleague said about this. I think you must draw a division between doing business with the SABC, for instance, selling computers. But I'm actually concentrating now on the creative people inside the SABC. For instance, you've got a talented radio announcer. And there's many in the SABC and all the different stations. And some of these radio announcers, because of their talent, they also present TV programs. So if you disallow this, I think you will lose the talent. I'm talking especially about presenting. And this is a very creative sort of talent, and not everyone has got that. And if the SABC has to imply that very, very strictly, I think there might be a slight problem. So I would love to hear what Mr. Nicholson said about this, doing business with the SABC and then using your talent to improve the product of the SABC. Thank you, Jefferson.
You see, members, maybe... they might not, but they have to respond on some of the issues. But my recommendation would be that we allow the board to go back and look into this matter. But you must remember that we are talking from where we are standing. We don't have the inner understanding of how things are happening there.
I think part of the issue which Honorable Van der Berg is raising is the inner operation of the broadcasters, how things are happening there, which we don't have. But we require that if you can go back and look into that issue so that maybe you will come back with a comprehensive report around that. How do you intend to manage that, like Honorable Magaz has indicated, and also checking others, how do they perform or how do they manage this particular matter and so on. Because we don't want to give a clear-cut solution, which might have negative impact on your day operation and so on. But you just have that broader sort of understanding in terms of how does it work, how are you going to package it, how do you try to cap it, and so on and so on. Put understanding the industry and what is happening there. Because we don't want to just to conclude on a matter. We're not expect on your era of broadcasting and so on. But whatever case may be, I think one close to 1.6 employee out of 5,000 employee is a little bit too much. Whatever case or angle we are approaching it, but we cannot be conclusive of the matter. I could see Ms. Green, the hand was up.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make a brief comment on the discussion. I think that the honourable members are quite right in their reaction to this situation. But just to comment on what the honourable Van den Berg has said about freelancers, certainly there is a difference between freelancers internally and people doing business. But I also want to caution, and this is my own view, it's not a board view, it hasn't really been discussed by the board yet, between using the same talent across every platform. Because what we do is we stifle a diversity of voices and you don't allow new talent to come up. And what has happened in the past is that often kind of it leads to a kind of a favoritism of giving one or two people a lot of contracts. So I'm keen to see a policy that is a fairer and more transparent policy that will allow for more diversity of voices so the public can hear a lot of different kind of voices on radio and TV.
Mr. Gin. Chair, I think we should welcome the time that you are given to go back and engage on this matter. Because when you speak to managers on the ground, they'll tell you, for example, we've got Robert Marawa working for DSTV and Radio Metro. And you say, how do you allow this person to work for two competing organizations? And when they explain, you just cannot have an answer. Because, for example, Leslie sitting here was explaining to me that Discovery, the people who sponsor the Discovery Sports Show, demand that they want Robin Marawa. If Robin Marawa is not presenting that show, they're pulling out. So there are those realities which, when we come back, obviously we will explain. You have people like Golani Gwala presenting on PM Live on SAFM, but also on Sunday presenting as Kulume. Now, he's no longer there now, and we have not yet checked what is happening to the audiences. You might find that because he's no longer there, the audiences are going down. So those are the things, but we welcome the opportunity to go back and do more work on that. Thank you.
I hope when you come back on the matter, we are going to school us to understand what is exactly happening. But because it's a matter of balancing, you see Ms. Green's raising the issue that as much as you've got the talent which is running, but you are starting other talent which must be emerging, which cannot be. But I think it's a terrain which you can engage more yourself and come back to us with a comprehensive proposal or whatever policy you take around that matter. But the point which I'm raising was that it will be difficult for us to say this is what you must do because we have to consider certain elements or within your area of operation and so on. We don't want to stifle your issues, but we just want the police around that, which we can be taken through that police, but the police must take into consideration all these issues and so on. I'm sure we agree with that. We can move maybe to another item if we all agree around that particular matter. Are there any other questions around the Auditor General report? Or we are done? If we are done with the Auditor General's report, maybe we can go to the
We have dealt with the salaries. We have dealt with disciplinary cases. Performance review of the SABC board. Any questions around that? Performance review of the SABC board. That's where your functionality and other things will come in. Honorable Kilen and Honorable Zef.
Thank you, Chair. Just at the outset, I think we have said before that we are very grateful for the members who have committed themselves to help put the board on the right course and to really build the SABC as an institution going forward. We also hope that with processes that as a portfolio committee we will be embarking upon, we will soon fill the vacancies towards the end of January so that the stresses and strains on the board chairman and the other members are not so severe, but that the board will be functioning with a full complement from them. Chair, and I also wanted to say personally, I find it a very constructive engagement with the board members today, and I want to thank them for being willing to listen through all the discussions and all the concerns that are raised, etc. And I trust that we will also have them participating fully in this component of the report. I just wanted to ask one specific question, and that actually emanates from the meeting that we had, and we understand from the board chairman that we had the two reports. What is the status of those reports? Will we have a formal withdrawal of those two reports, the one that was tabled? The chairperson already referred to that one. He said actually that some of the elements of his presentation to the PC, you know, were sort of perhaps out of line. Similarly, some of the elements contained in the report by the rest of the board, which was also tabled on that day but which was not discussed, I think that also needs to be taken forward. We do not want to lose important elements. We're happy that there's a turnaround strategy now because a lot of that report focused on their concerns with regards to that specific matter. Just want to say that we heard, as far as the appointment of the head of news is concerned, that the board approved the position on the 6th of September going forward. What is the position as far as he is concerned at this stage? Was he paid fully from the day that he's the announcement of his appointment? And if so, how will the board handle that specific matter? Because if he's only formally appointed from the 6th of September, then clearly that would be irregular payment and that would come out in the next year's AG report. Secondly, what is the term of office that he has been employed for? I believe that there was a resolution by the interim board that contracts would only be awarded for a maximum of 3 years. What is his term of his contract? And then lastly, if the board has condoned the processes leading up to the appointment of Mr. Molefe on the 6th, in other words, were they satisfied that the subcommittee or the panel that conducted the interviews and the number of people, shortlists, etc., all of them were granted a fair opportunity to present themselves as a possible head of news. So just as far as that is concerned, thank you, Chair.
Maybe one issue before I take Honorable Michael. The report has indicated that they've appointed, not rectified, the appointment of head of news. That's the report is given in the morning. Honourable Michael.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just to follow on from what Honourable Killian was saying about the appointment of former Lefi, there are, in fact, questions that need to be asked regarding the appointment of former Lefi, in that I have it on very good authority that, in fact, not all candidates had the opportunity
to be heard and scored before the appointment of Mr. Formalesi. I agree that the appointment is now an appointment, an official appointment, and not a ratification. As in actual fact, the board simply declared his previous appointment as a fait and non complete because it was you know, completely wrong from the onset. However, Formalesi earned a salary from the time that he was appointed by Mr. Solly Mkwetla. He signed a contract with the SABC, regardless of whether or not the board viewed his appointment at that time to be correct or to be legal. The fact of the matter is he was earning a salary. And that now brings into question what happens with that kind of irregular expenditure, because you're now in trouble with the TFMA. It will be, the Auditor General will have to list it as an irregular expenditure. A contract was signed. So my question is exactly what's going to happen, you know, with that kind of funding. Chair, also, you know, just in a broader sense, where do we find out exactly what happened with regards to Formalesi? Because we hear stories through the media, we hear stories from the board in terms of reports that they give to us. I myself have seen two reports that are contradictory regarding the appointment of Formalesi. Solly Mkwetla isn't here and wouldn't, even if he was here, wouldn't be able to respond to us because of the disciplinary processes that are you know, busy going ahead. So, Chair, I would like to see a full report about the Formalesi issue from the original appointment that the board did not ratify across all the months up until the point that the board did actually appoint Formalesi as the head of media, the head of news, rather. And Chair, I've got to say, the absolute turnaround that was shown by the board, that they were so anti the appointment, and then, you know, he was appointed with, from what I believe was almost full consensus of the board, I also find, you know, quite strange, and maybe we can have some kind of comment on that, because unfortunately we have to hear about all of this through the media, and now we have the board in front of us, and we can get, you know, some straight answers. But I think the whole process of the appointment of Formalesi, from the start till today, is unsavory. Questions have to be answered, and Chair, I'm very happy that the board's here because it gives us, it's the real first opportunity that we've had for a frank, open and honest discussion about exactly what happened with the appointment of Formalesi.
Honourable Mthami.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on the functionality of the board. And then I'll refer members again to the legal requirements and regulatory requirements which the auditors speak, specifically now with reference to the board. Can I check now, during the last presentation it was indicated that there were certain board members who had not yet disclosed their interest. That's my first question. Have all members now disclosed their interest? Secondly, is the issue wherein Mr. Jenner raised earlier to say sometimes you are accused as a board, you are stepping on the rules. There was an indication of management who don't follow policies and procedures, and that's what the AG finds. Also, that they don't use the financial resources in an effective manner. Has the board now acted against those, apart from this SIU thing? Referring to the current year, the board picked up one typical misconduct by management and acted against it. The other one was the issue of the assets. I've seen the action plan in terms of the AG report. They were employees who were using assets of the SABC for personal use, for private use. Have action been taken against those people?
The other one was that the last one is with regard to the issue of the separate financial statements for the years ending March 2009 and March 2010 with regard to the public broadcast services and the public commercial services, which were not yet submitted. Has the board set and considered those statements and submitted and prepared and submitted those financial statements as required by the Broadcasting Act? I'm waiting now, Chair, you remembered me. Now, on the issue of film release, I'm partly covered by the Honourable Member in regard to the issue of salaries. What remains for me, just want to check that if immediately after the formalization of the appointment, was he informed of the consequences, if any, can have in regard to the salaries he earned prior to this formal appointment? Was there any engagement between the board and him? Is he aware that this will cause an irregular expenditure, and how do you intend to correct that? I'm referring to the issue of the appointment. The first appointment was done, the former CEO, then later it was not corrected. It was formally done again by the board, but if he is aware. And in regard to the board itself on subcommittees, I've checked in most of the, if not all, the subcommittees, key decisions were made. I assume implementations have to be done in different levels. But what I want to check is the progress report in regard to this decision. Taking a decision and implementing a decision is two different things, and we are more interested. Honourable Mudambe has been referring you to action. That is what we are interested in. That here, decisions have been made, key decisions have been made, but what are the implemented progress reports in that, in regarding those issues? The other issue is in regard to the technology DTT committee, that it failed to meet in some of the meetings. If you can give us reasons why it didn't meet, because you are saying it has impacted on the timeline of making some decisions, and what are those impacts that they have caused by the non-taking place of these meetings? Thank you.
Thank you. You can respond on the issues as they've been raised. Okay, thank you, Chairperson. First, I'll start with the issue of the appointment of the Head of News and Current Affairs in SABC, Mr. Phil Molefe. Firstly, I think it's important to debunk the untruth that the other candidates did not get a chance to be interviewed. I was personally in SABC Auckland Park. Part of the interviews were four candidates. I don't know whether I need to mention them. Were four candidates that were shortlisted by the panel came to be interviewed. How the process happened is that during the CBA conference, we had a meeting in the venue of the CBA conference where we actually did the shortlisting. Because as a board, initially we were supplied with a shortlist. That was done without the involvement of the board. We spoke to HR and said we feel that the board should, they should bring all the applicants, and they were all brought to us, and we looked at them, and we decided to shortlist four candidates. That process was delayed a bit because when the panelists were appointed in a board meeting, some board members were out of the country, and there was a feeling that we should wait until everyone is back. But later it transpired that as soon as another one comes back, another one is not available. And we just felt that we as a commitment that we want to fill all the vacant positions, we needed to proceed. And at a particular point, then we decided that in any case, the panelists who were in the country were available, were the majority, and we'll have to proceed with the interviews. So we had interviews. We interviewed all four candidates. The only thing that happened that did not happen that day is that we could not finish the scoring. Once we were starting, one of the panelists had to leave because he had another commitment. So we did not complete scoring on that day. We then agreed that we were going to meet on a Monday, because remember it was a Friday. We met on a Monday in Midrand, where we attempted to continue to with the scoring. As I've explained, that we then discussed how news should look like, and we agreed in that meeting in Midrand that we were going to take a particular recommendation to the board on the 3rd of June. And it is now public knowledge that before the 3rd of June, an announcement was made that an appointment has been made. On the 22nd of May, the board, it was a Saturday, the board met, where we felt that as a board, the appointment was not done according to what the law says it should happen, in that the panelists were supposed to bring a recommendation to the board and then let the board make a decision. So on the basis of that, without talking to the wrongness or the rightness of candidates, on the basis of that, the board meeting of the 22nd said that the appointment was not done appropriately, and therefore we need to proceed with the process, and the appointment is not is null and void. We actually called it a purported appointment. We then had a number of meetings as a board where it was agreed by all of us that we need to proceed with the process as how it should have happened. And I remember at that point there was even a discussion where others were saying we should include even those that were not in the original interview in the process of trying to complete the scoring. And it was felt that it was going to be wrong to include people who were not part of the initial interview. So we had to proceed. And in one meeting, I remember, where we actually did the scoring, it was also in Midrand, some board members, some of my colleagues decided to abstain. Two colleagues abstained, that is Barbara Masekela and Pippa Green. They felt that they were going to abstain from the scoring, so which left myself and the other two directors, the chair and the GCO, to do the scoring. And we went to the board with those scores. The first board meeting that we went to said no. Some of the members that scored were conflicted, and therefore they should not score. So on that day, we did not complete the process. We had another board meeting where, after engagements, board members agreed themselves that they're actually giving themselves powers that they don't have to disappoint directors. Because what it amounted to say that before the process you had a particular view and therefore you should not perform your duties as a director, or was a little bit unfair to others. So as a result, that board meeting then took the scores from the three directors who had done the scoring, and there was a discussion. Some board members decided to abstain from the process, but the majority of board members supported the view that on the 6th of September, Mr. Phil Molefe was the best candidate in terms of the report that was given by members of the panel that scored. I don't know the good authority that the honorable member is talking about, but this is a good authority that I'm giving, that all four candidates were interviewed. When we took a decision on the 6th, I think it was mentioned earlier here that we said the new subcommittee should develop the KPIs and discuss the conditions, even discuss the issue of how the news department is structured for what we want to achieve. I think we've just presented a turnaround strategy that talks to a new way of doing things, and we said that the subcommittee should do that. It is unfortunate that before the subcommittee could continue with those discussions, I think they did have one meeting, and then Feleng Seka, who's the chair of the new subcommittee, who has not yet been replaced, then resigned from the board. So that further discussion about the KPIs and everything has not yet taken place. And between the board meeting that made the appointment, we've not had a board meeting that received the report from the new subcommittee, obviously because the new subcommittee, as it is now, does not have a chairperson, and it has not been able to engage on these matters. And we are planning, obviously, to have a meeting very soon to address the issue of the chairpersons that are not there, because currently Makgato Mello was also the chairperson of a technology subcommittee, and that is why some meetings of the technology subcommittee could not take place when he was not available to preside over them. So I don't know which two reports are contradictory. It's unfortunate that the sources of those reports were not said, but this is a report that I'm giving, and I was part of the panel. Now, as to what is going to happen to the fact that Mr. Molefe earned a salary from May to September, it's a matter that management has to deal with. Remember, we take a decision as a board that this is a decision that as from the 6th of September we're appointing. But I think portfolio committee members must be mindful that this is not an easy matter, because in terms of Mr. Phil Molefe as an employee, he has received the contract, he has signed the contract. So it's not a matter that we should just handle maybe in public, because this is a public platform. I think portfolio committee must know that board members mean it when they say the appointment happened on the 6th of September, and the board will take appropriate action that relates to how we manage that issue, maybe without if chair will be allowed not to go to the details. Hopefully by the 13th of December when we meet, management and the new subcommittee would have had an opportunity to have a chairperson and to meet and then come to the board with how are we going to address that matter. And we fully understand the matters that were raised by the portfolio committee members. But having said that, we might be open to litigation, so we have to be careful how to deal with the matter, because there is something called an expectation in law, and the corporation might have created an expectation which we need to manage in a very careful manner. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nicholson.
Following the appointment on the 6th of September, I've met with Mr. Molefe, and we've had a conversation where this issue has been put to him, and that's an ongoing discussion with Phil. We've not yet resolved it, but we have commenced the process of having that conversation with him.
Ms. Green.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to build add a little bit to what Mr. Gina has said. As I'm sure everyone knows, this was a very painful decision, episode that the board lived through, and in fact, you know, I think we lost our first member, you know, part of the reason, Ambassador Masekela. What Mr. Gina said is correct. People were interviewed. We had another proposal about our concern, I should say, from the beginning, is to try and restore the editorial integrity and worth of news. We were very concerned over the past year. Audience figures have declined markedly, and particularly on stations where they shouldn't have declined. Radio Current Affairs shows, for instance, which don't have direct competition, like Lesedi Current Affairs, have gone down. Ukhozi's lost a lot of people. I think altogether it's about 1.2 million on Radio Current Affairs alone.
So there is concern about the credibility and the audience figures, which plays directly into the turnaround plan that Ms. O'Neill spoke about. That if you don't have the audiences, you don't attract easy ads, which people who know the business like she does will understand. But what I want to say is that I am still here despite that episode. The 6th of September meeting, there were unfortunately four people absent, including two of the panel members. I was one of them. I had another professional engagement, and Ambassador Masekela had left. And I think there were two or three abstentions or opponents, nay votes in that meeting. Nonetheless, those of us who weren't there have, you know, we've had to take a decision. We accept the situation. But the KPIs, which I think you'd asked about earlier, the Honourable Killian, have been drawn up. Unfortunately, as Mr. Gina said, the resignations then happened and people left immediately. The KPIs is a document that already exists and will look like all KPIs to measure on objective measures, stuff like audience, you know, on kind of audiences as share of the television channel or a share of the radio station, as well as in absolute numbers and trends. You know, editorial integrity is hard to measure, but you can measure it against certain things like complaints that are upheld with the BCCSA, etc. So we are, I think there is an awareness that really the key issue is not so much the personality, but the key issue is to fix and to turn around the news so that it can be integrated as part of the turnaround plan.
Thank you. There were other issues which were raised, other than raised by Honorable Ntambi, around the separation of financial statements. Any response around that?
One of the issues we were trying to get a fix on. The accounts for both years are currently with one of the audit firms for finalization. So we will try and get that finished before we break this year. We just need to follow up with the audit firm. We can't contact the auditor.
There are other issues, so I want us to remind you.
I remember there's one issue about was it called the turnaround of the board? I hope the honorable member is familiar with Lenin, that when Lenin started talking about trade unions, he said that they're supposed to be neutral. But during the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution, he was no longer of that view. I'm just using Lenin to prove that people are allowed to change their views. If the honorable member has spoken to board members who maybe had different views, it's quite possible that when we went to the 6th September meeting, they changed their views. But it's quite possible that, because I think it was clearly made that some people abstained in that meeting, it's quite possible that some of those who abstained were those that had spoken to the honorable member to say that they were opposed to appointment. But we've always said, I think even Feleng, the deputy chair of the board, when she went to national television with the chair to announce the appointment, she did say that as a board, we've never had any personal issues with Phil Molefe, because how it was reported sometimes in the media, it was like we have personal issues with Phil. Or at least some of us had personal issues. We've never had personal issues with Phil. He was acting in that position, for the matter of fact, before he was appointed. If we had personal issues, I'm sure it was going to be one of our first issues to do that we have personal issues with Phil, and therefore he should not continue to act. So I just want to dispel the information that was in the public, that actually board members had personal issues with Phil. We never had personal issues with Phil. He was treated just like any other candidates amongst the four candidates, and he was the best candidate in the interview. Thank you.
Ms. Oni.
Chairperson, I just want to give a comment to the Honourable House from a very different perspective, which is with my perspective on this whole matter, in that I'm a professional person. I come from the business world. I look at things purely from a business perspective. And the view that, and I'm now personalizing it to myself, and I want to play the ball, not the player, in Mr. Malefi. So let's play the ball, not the player. What was happening is, as time went on, as the honourable members have noted in the House, from May until September, so many things happened. You know, the press and the, you know, all sorts of things happened. From my perspective as an individual board member, using my unfettered discretion by the time it came to September was, as a director of the organization, we could no longer have the organization being paralyzed because of the issue. And that is also what governed thinking, because we reside over the organization, and to allow it to be paralyzed for such a long period of time would also not have been a productive way of dealing with things. So in a funny way, we were, you know, what happened, but it enabled the organization to move forward to a point that we could come to that today with the turnaround strategy. And I really just want to give that very almost clinical business perspective on the matter, because paralyzing an organization over an incident and all the events that followed was also not the right thing. So I'm just giving that perspective.
There was the issue of private use of SABC assets, which was asked. What type of action was taken against those employees?
Help me just get the context for that again. Was it in the AG report?
Maybe we can take Honourable Makers.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, many of the media reports that we read, and please, Ms. O'Neill, I agree with you. You play the ball, not the player. And I don't think anyone is talking about Phil Malefi. We're talking about his appointment. I mean, that's the key issue here. Not Phil, the appointment. And this is just what I've read in the media, was that there was political pressure to make this appointment as quickly as possible. I want to know from the board members, was there any political pressure? Because there certainly shouldn't have been. And then, Chair, I also just want to know, because this is something I don't know, what kind of authority does the board have? Should someone who's in charge of news and etc. Say, for example, I was in charge of news, and the board felt that I was acting in a way that was inappropriate and not in line with what I was supposed to be doing. What kind of authority does the board have over me to ensure that I exercise my duty in a free and transparent manner?
I thought it was important for us, because it is not about the individual. Many of us know Mr. Malefi for quite some time. It's not that. It is a question of turning a new page in the SABC, making sure that all the processes and procedures are correctly followed, that we all abide by the rules and the statutes are respected, be it the BFMA, whatever. So it is an issue of making sure that matters are brought before the board in the correct fashion and the correct process and procedure, taking resolutions. If it's the best candidate, so be it. It's the best candidate. So that was not the issue, Chair. I think moving forward, but I do understand what Ms. Anil has said. For us as well, we really needed to know, how do we turn the SABC board, cooperation amongst the members, et cetera, around. Because you cannot dwell on a specific issue for too long. Then it becomes stale. You have to move on. But today still, we're sitting with the results of unprocedural acts. And I think this, just as the AG report, is perhaps, it's a good thing that it happened early in the life of the SABC board, because I do believe that henceforth all subcommittees, all panels will be conducting all of their actions in the correct fashion. We still need a resolution as far as the appointment date is concerned, as far as period, because I also don't know what the period of the contract is. Mr. Ginner has not elaborated on that. I don't know if Mr. Nichols can perhaps elaborate on that, if it's a 3-year or a 5-year period. But let's say the appointment was done, and as from now on, the person, whoever is in a position, such a person will be evaluated against KPIs. And I think we take the process forward. Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Honorable Ntambi.
It's a follow-up again on the functionality of the board. I'm interested on the legal and the regulatory requirements. I was reading the report of the audit committee as per pages 62 up to 66 of the document that was given to us, response to matters raised. I don't see anywhere, as it was also raised in the audit, on the functionality of board, where in the internal audit plan of the SABC was approved by the audit committee. And this is the issue that was raised. I want to check, hence we are told that the board is now functional. Has the internal audit plan of the SABC been approved? Secondly, the AG found that there were cases of financial misconduct, which in terms of Treasury Regulation 33.3 are supposed to be submitted annually by the board to the AG and the National Treasurer. And the National Treasurer. Has such now then since been submitted to National Treasury and the Auditor General? And then the question that was answered was with regard to the separate financial statements. The response that I got was that you have contracted the company, they are busy working on that. Are there any timelines, given the fact that you didn't submit for March 2009, same as for March 2010? Do you have timelines to deal with those issues? And then the issue of disclosures by board members, it was not answered. Because last time when you reported, there were members who didn't disclose. Now have they all disclosed their interest as board members? Remember, we're raising the issue of official slates now for the board members.
Mr. Kim?
Chairperson, I'll try and respond to the question of the so-called political pressure. Because I really don't know how political pressure is measured, but also the source that the honourable member is talking about is the media. I do not know whether when I read in the papers that a premier of Western Cape has paid money to buy space in a radio station in Western Cape, I should just then believe that. So you know that we are having a discussion about the media in South Africa, and it's an important discussion that the country is having, because indeed on many occasions our media has been proven to be wrong in some instances. And in this case, personally, I've not been approached by any board member to tell me that he has a political pressure to take a particular decision. I've not been spoken to. I've not been given any political pressure by anyone. And besides, as Claire has put it, many of us in this board are independent people. We apply our mind independently. Thank you.
Yes, Chairperson. Look, to follow, I think it's only correct that we, if we choose to do so, express ourselves on the issue of the appointment. In the documents that you should have received, there is a report of the new subcommittee. Now, there's absolutely no doubt that the process with regarding the appointment of Mr. Molefe started off as a complete and utter debacle. There's no doubt in my mind that there was a contravention of the article, Memorandum and Articles of Association of the SABC, the Public Finance Management Act, and the Delegated Authority Framework, which was reported to the shareholder and to you. So when you ask about an inquiry, that is up to you. This now sits with you as to whether you wish to institute an inquiry in terms of the Broadcasting Act. As Ms. O'Neill said, as this debacle paralyzed the board in terms of our inability to properly undertake our fiduciary duties, and as certain, and I'm choosing my words carefully here, as it would appear to me that including myself, that certain board members certainly were feeling pressure about our responsibilities to the people of this country, first and foremost in terms of our obligations, and to the SABC and to the government, and ultimately the appointing authority of the president. So there was a realization that this could not go on. We had reported to you in Parliament, and you had done nothing. It was very clear that our document was stated that 11 out of 12 non-executive directors presented what I thought was quite a substantive report to you on the issue, and nothing happened. In the report to you now, it is clear that on the 6th of September, the appointment was confirmed by the board with 5 non-executive members voting for, 2 voting against, and 1 abstention, and 4 members of the board were absent when the voting took place. And I think that was because it wasn't on the agenda of the meeting that we were to hold. I mean, the call for the appointment was not on the agenda of the meeting. I was, in fact, on a teleconference from Cape Town. So this was something, a decision was made that it couldn't go on. We had to resolve the differences. We had to move on. And that is exactly what we've done. And so I understand your very correct concerns with regard to the contract. I have asked to see the contract. I asked the now suspended GCO and several times, and I was completely ignored. So I cannot ask you. I do not know the contents of that contract. I do know that I serve on the news committee, and as Professor Green has said, we have drawn up KPIs. And in fact, Professor Green has worked very hard on it, that we should come to the board, that we will attempt then to address the contract. But as Mr. Nicholson and Mr. Gina has said, Mr. Gina in particular, expectations have been given, but at the same time, on the 22nd of September, the 22nd of May, thereafter our meeting, Mr. Molefe was explicitly told, and it was in a press conference, that the purported appointment was null and void. So he should have not have had an expectation for more than a day or two. He would have very specifically known that appointment was not legal. So he clearly, it would appear to me, I haven't got the figures, that he has received money from that date, and he would appear to be in negotiation with the acting group chief executive officer as to whether that money should be repaid. But clearly, if it's not worked out, it will be audited as such as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as you are well aware. So it's been extremely unfortunate, but we have given our undertaking to the minister, the new minister, as we have indeed, I think, attempted to do today, to say to you that we are now doing our utmost to do what we were appointed to do in the first place, and that is turn around the corporation and produce excellence in public broadcasting. Now, to go back to Ms. Michael's request about what do you do when you know, if there's a what is seen as a breach of the editorial code, I assume you're referring to that. In the report that we've given you here, I mean, there's a whole list of how we see as board members serving on the news committee, setting editorial policies which are relevant and compliant as of now, in the integrity of the news and current affairs and programming, to ensure that we have accessible, accurate, compelling, professional, it's all here, authoritative news. But we obviously must defend the editorial independence. You can't have a situation where board members interfere. You cannot have that. But once again, our job is oversight. So if one sees that the editorial policies and that, for instance, official languages are being ignored, that people aren't being treated equitably in line with the Constitution and the Broadcasting Act, that there's not a plurality of views and a variety of news and information and analysis, then obviously we have to step in. But once again, let us test, as Professor Green said, let us see the kind of complaints that are coming in, because we obviously will be looking at those very, very carefully. But it is not the job, and I'm sure you will agree with me, that it's not the job of any director of the SABC to interfere in the actual production of and execution of news and current affairs and the content therein.
Are you responding or are you making a follow-up? Because they're supposed to respond. Okay.
Chair, it's a point of information that I think is necessary, because Ms. Fox must please not think that we did nothing. As soon as it was brought to our attention that the formal FE issue had occurred, the very first thing I did, and Ms. Fox knows I did this, is I wrote to the public protector and I asked for a full investigation into the appointment, because, I work in Parliament, and I'm a member of Parliament, and it's my right as a member of Parliament to ask the public protector to investigate the issue that fell within the public domain. So while perhaps this, I hear what Ms. Hoss is saying, that this committee didn't do anything, I want her to know that certain members did in fact take this very seriously and take serious steps in that regard.
You see, I don't want to respond to what they might be told, what the committee did and not do and didn't do. We know how the events unfolded until up to date. If just people must just get time and follow what happened since this matter started, they will understand why the committee acted the way it acted and so on. But our eyes were on the ball. Honorable sir.
I just wanted to say, this engagement, how does it assist us in the today's meeting? It doesn't. But I'm saying, cover.
No. You see, members, I just allow you to engage on this matter thoroughly, because it's one of the issues which has been long outstanding. But I must say that the discussion on this item, you concluded yourself as members, when we're asking questions, because most of you, we have appreciated the processes and the difficulty. But we have also indicated that we have since moved on, in particular this matter. But it was important to reflect on what has happened so that moving forward, we don't repeat the same and so on. But I'm just saying, I allow the discussion so that at least everyone can and be able to engage on the matter and be clarified on certain issues and so on. But like Ms. Killian, Honorable Killian indicated that indeed certain things happened, but we must learn on those things which have happened. In particular, how do we move forward and avoid some of these things which have happened and so on, which I think is a matter which you will take as a board, so that moving forward, everyone understand where the authority lies in terms of the board and who can do what and so on, which you are articulating yourself as board members, and also the portfolio committee members are indicating or reflecting that particular matter. We all indicated that it was an unfortunate situation to see those things playing out itself out in the media and other things, but at least today, the committee has got the first opportunity to hear on the matter into details and your ratification of what process we have engaged at. I would think that members, the acting group CEO has indicated that they are engaging on the process of ratification or trying to deal with other consequences of the appointment of the 6th of September. So we'll wait the report around that particular matter in terms of the issue raised, in terms of the salary which might have been received before the actual appointment and so on. So we'll wait a progress report around this particular matter. But I was also just guarding against that we don't end up discussing the actual details of the issue as there's an ongoing discussion around that. We just wait for the report to come back to us so that we engage in that particular progress report and so on, which I hope your engagement is within the parameters of your PFMA, your policies and other things. It's not something which is outside the broader legal framework which you're supposed to engage at. But we'll wait for that report and when you finish that process. Mr. Nichols, you want to go to the other question?
Yes, please, sir. On the board disclosures, there's very little we can do about the 2009 disclosures that weren't made. The year-end finished in March. In respect of the current fiscal year, all disclosures have been made. In respect of the inappropriate use of SABC assets, we will follow the process of civil recovery in some cases. We'll follow the process of civil recovery or negotiation in every case. So there are some that we still haven't got final answers on, such as the security services. But obviously, if that works out that there wasn't an authority for that, we'd have to seek recovery of those monies. I think, Chair, those were all of the questions. That's everything. Yeah? Thanks. Yeah, thanks.
The chair of the court.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the Portfolio Committee. I would like to assure the honourable members that hard lessons have been learned, and we are working with the spirit of unity at a very high level, with full consultation on all the issues that are facing the board. I do not think those mistakes will happen again. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would think, Chair, that looking on the issues which has been raised from the one of scheduling of meetings until the last met, which we have dealt with. But let me say, firstly, General, I appreciate what members themselves have raised the issue, that they see a lot of improvement within the court itself in terms of your resilience, in terms of taking the corporation forward. I think that's one issue which we just want to appreciate. But there are other issues which have been raised, which you need to make follow-up on those issues. Is the issue of your outstanding cases, the matter which has been discussing now in terms of how do you rectify some of the issues which have been done so that you fall within your policies and so on. In particular, Chair, the issue of the retention bonuses, which we said you must be able to come back into that matter, where you clarify your separation of senior managers vis-à-vis specialized personnel or people, which you currently call them senior general managers, to say that, so that we know exactly who is who within the corporation and so on. The other issue which we just still need a follow-up, but it's an ongoing engagement, is the Auditor General's investigation report. I'm sure that's ongoing because you are busy implementing certain things. So we love that each time you are able to brief us about the progress around those particular matter and so on. Mr. Kina raised the issue of the SIU, that maybe at one point we'll have to seek an advice and commit in terms of how to deal with that. Where possible, if we can get a thorough briefing around the issue of the SIU. But we have to get a thorough advice around that because our ongoing cases which have not been finalized and so on. I would think that in general, we just appreciate the unit which you seem to be building within yourself as a board. But we have raised a very critical issue to say this unit should not be at the expense of good corporate governance and flouting of a legal framework because it will be a temporary unit. Whatever you build as unit, it will find its basis at the core of the legal framework which is governing us. There will be no shortcut around those particular issues and so on. But we're also pleased that you have still held on as a board. You know, initially when we started the meeting, Honorable Van der Berg raised the issue, which Mr. Harris, I suppose, responded to that matter, is that we appreciate the work which you are doing as a board. You are hard at work, not yourself as a board only. We know that there are also executive managers behind yourself who day and night they just work so hard in order to make sure that the corporation moves forward, even at the lower level and so on. As we are sitting here, SAPC continue to operate because they committed themselves in terms of making sure that the work of the corporation continue to move forward and so on. I think, in general, we have learned out of the experiences we had. And now is the time that we are able to move forward and take the corporation to a higher level in such a way that we also build the image and so on. But I must also indicate that on your turnaround strategy, you see, you have gave us a turnaround strategy, which we have indicated that is a work in progress. But key to that is it possible that it's not an issue whether it's possible or not. Can you engage your stakeholders? Because as you continue with that, you need to make sure that everyone's on board. A very strategic question was raised that if you finish this turnaround strategy without taking on board your managers, on board your organized labor, your other stakeholders, who's going to make sure that you implement this strategy of yours to be successful and so on? And I must say that we continue to get letters from this side of the table, from your organized labor, from some of your stakeholders, which indicates that there is a lack of consultation in terms of your work which you are doing. But we have encouraged them to come back to you, or we continue to encourage them to come back to you so that you engage them, so that you've got a buy-in general in terms of the turnaround strategy and so on, so that no one is left behind around those particular matters. We have listened to your plea about the additional 4 board members which have been raised. I'm sure by now with the public knowledge that we have extended the nomination period to the 6th of December. The current set date, if God permit, will be having the report before Parliament on the 27th of January, 2011. We might be finalizing the issue of the appointment of the 4, which means by the 1st of February, if things go well, you might have your full complement of the board again, moving forward and so on. But those processes are also subjected to Parliament's program and changes around there and so on. But if things go as planned, you should be having your board members by around February. The other 4 which we need to put in so that you continue to work to move forward. Our expectation is very high to this board and your senior executive manager. We don't want to beat about the bushes. Our expectation is too high, and we only expect that you are going to succeed and take this corporation where it belongs, nothing less around that. So as members are becoming hard to ask questions to you because they are jealous about this SAPC. They want to make sure that the people who are looking after this SAPC, they also make sure that they take responsible decisions to make sure that this glorious SAPC of ours, which we are having as a country, is taken good care of by yourself as a board. It's not that the members are unreasonable. It's the jealous which we have about this SAPC. But I hope that they will continue to do that until we meet next time. Thanks very much, Chairperson, and members, for your perseverance from the morning until up to now. We'll see each other on the evening event, which we are having tonight. We might be receiving the Kenyan delegation tomorrow. They had flight problem to leave Kenya. They only arrived in Joburg today, I'm told. So they might be here tomorrow. Then we can have our lunch with the Kenyan delegation. I'm just heartbroken that Honorable Mruta might not be here. She might not be here. And she will miss very much some of the Kenyan delegation, I suppose. thank you very much, members. We will meet tomorrow at 9, the same venue. Thank you. No. What you can say, chairperson of the board, it's an appeal. We don't want to micromanage you. But can you try to handle your public statements and so on reasonably as a board member? Just have handle those issues reasonably so that you don't have individual members commenting. There should be order. Who's commenting on what and so on. It can't be every board member when his phone just commenting like a choir, in a church choir and so on. Thank you very much.